Welcome to the Gritty Hour. Time to get down to the nitty gritty.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Gritty Hour. Appreciate you people coming in and joining us week after week. It's very nice of you to do. I hope you're enjoying our podcast. This week we have a special guest. His name is John Hogan, and he's the department chair of Orange Ulster BOCES. He's in control of the Adaptive Physical Education Program, which is, I guess, under the special education umbrella. And we certainly welcome you to the Gritty Hour, John.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're honored to have you. So what I really wanted to discuss, John, and this is what I'm interested in, I think I told you right before we started recording, that we've had a number of teachers and professors on our podcast in the past, and what always came up in the conversation was the challenges of dealing with the pandemic in terms of teaching and relating to students. So that piqued my interest, and I know you're on the adaptive physical education side, and I think that's even more of a challenge than some of the other professors we're dealing with. It's not, you know, you can't teach physical education over the Zoom call. So I know the challenges are there, and I was hoping you could inform our audience what you had to deal with during the last couple of two, three years already.
Well, in the beginning, like with everyone else, it was definitely, you know, a learning curve, especially the technology, especially, you know, how am I going to be able to reach my students, you know, in an effective way, still make them feel that movement, even though now that you're in a confined space, you're home, you can still do that and try to be positive and continue to, you know, not become a couch potato, you know, especially in the, in our society nowadays where we're very insular and we're so, you know, easy to be distracted with you know, video games and TikTok. And I utilize that. I told them to go ahead because that's the movement. You know, it's an app that you do a little short, even 8 to 20 second dance. But on the other hand, you know, with these other social media apps and whatnot that the kids are using, you know, they spend all day just on their phones or on their computers and you know, and YouTube and just watching. It's just there's no output. It's all input into their brain. So definitely moving is important to get that brain, you know, functioning. And as you know, a healthy mind and body goes hand in hand.
Right. And has that been, I'm assuming that's been exacerbated, what you just described, because of the pandemic, as people spending even more time at home, on the couch, online. So that's even more of a challenge for you.
It was. And, you know, each teacher had to set up their own Google Classroom. So me having, you know, especially in the area of being a special, I had over 150 to 200 students, you know, in my class. So, and a wide diversity of students. So I had to make sure that the assignments that they were given were attainable, you know, that in the beginning, I did not want to stress them out with, you know, these long, egregious, you know, reports or things as such. I utilized a lot of videos from YouTube, you know, various age-appropriate videos that could motivate them in doing various workouts, you know, even just a simple, you know, 5 to 10 minute workout, at least to see how they can get up and move in a small space. So, you know, virtual learning was a, you know, an anomaly for all of the educators, you know, within the world. I mean, obviously, how do we teach now? You know, you would think it would be futuristic from the Jetsons and things that we saw growing up, and now it's really happening. So having these kids, trying to engage them and get them on a schedule, you know, was very difficult in the beginning. And having them have the resources and fortunately, you know, many families, that people, you know, it was brought to light that they didn't even have internet. They didn't have the economic, you know, resources to even have that. How do we ask a child to learn virtually and then they cannot because it's out of their hands? Right. And that was very, you know, stressing and very frustrating, you know, and thank goodness, you know, I know some companies try to do some hot spots and whatnot. And then also as the pandemic, you know, extended itself, we did try to have parents come in at our school where they could come get a Chromebook for each of their children. So, and that was another very, you know, vile, again, you know, something again, in politics, you know, or in life, when something tragic happens, then finally some resources are found. You know, kids, every kid in America should have a Chromebook from their school district, you know, in this new age coming about. So that was great that once all the kids got a Chromebook that needed one, they got them, you know, and then we could move forward even more with what, you know, lessons I could provide for them, because now they had the resources to provide. You know, it's just like asking a child to go to school with a backpack empty and the school having nothing to put in the backpack.
Right.
So it was a learning curve for the students and the staff. I learned from them. They learned from me. Some of the, you know, my own child was with me, and she could help me with the technological parts of sharing two computers and just engaging the students and trying to show them, and just even like using sports highlights, or if that was the activity we're trying to talk about, just engaging them however I could to get them to just to be valued, to understand that we can still move. It's a pandemic, but I can still go for a walk, you know, as long as if I have a mask and I keep social distancing, if it's a nice day. In the beginning, of course, we did inside, you know, and depends on the weather and depends on their location. And, you know, just giving them a fitness log, fitness and nutritional log was very important that we developed that to see what they were eating and what activities they could do at home, and sent them, you know, via the Google Classroom, a myriad of different activities and different calisthenics, and music was very important too. I did my thesis with how music affects us, you know, and our moods and our body, and obviously with, you know, working out. You work out to Mozart, that's one thing. You work out to you know, the Eye of the Tiger, that's another. So those things, trying to let them find their music, and even then putting together, you know, a musical, you know, list that they found, and they would share it with me, and, you know, what was upbeat, and like how to maybe start with a low, you know, a slow song in the beginning to warm up a little bit. And even if it was just 20 minutes, that was amazing. If I got 20 minutes of movement from the show, and, you know, using music as a motivator was important.
You've always used that,
my population.
Is that a technique you've always used even pre-pandemic? Cause that's an interesting, aspect of, you know, physical therapy and just, you know, physical teaching.
Yes, music to start off, you know, the period. You know, it can be a gloomy day and you have a nice upbeat song, you know, and especially through the decades of my teaching, you've had to change. You know, there's Kids Bop, which has all these different, you know, artists that are in the now, you know, and that's what you have to stay on top of. You have to, as an educator, you just can't get run down into doing the things that you've started 20 years ago. That's not going to work now. You have to be able to be on the cutting edge, and you have to be willing to, you know, find things that continually motivate children. And in the pandemic, you know, unfortunately, the rate in the special ed you know, sector was very difficult because they have, everybody has their own needs, even in the general population, but especially with dysfunctional families, with their myriad of health and psychological and medical and physical handicaps, you know, having structure and you learn from your own environment and having that structure of going to a school. And then you have this schedule. Obviously we all remember that in school, and you follow that schedule. That schedule, you know, got you through that day. And now we have to implement a schedule at home. But if there's only one computer and you have two or three other siblings, how do you share that one computer? You know, so families had to deal with that. We had to be very flexible, which is important, and just had to have the student feel that, you know, if I can get just a little bit of something in the beginning, that's better than nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how you had to tread lightly in the beginning of the pandemic. And as it grew, you know, we could add more lessons, more challenges, more, you know, assignments that they were required to turn in, you know.
So I get the feeling, because you've been a teacher. How long have you been teaching?
I've been teaching about 27 years now.
Wow.
26 years.
God bless you. I get the feeling you've used music, in at least in this aspect of your teaching role, through most of that 27 years?
Well, my first 2 years, I was in the state of Florida, and that was a general ed middle school. But once I got up here into the Northeast and got my master's in special education, I knew I was doing adaptive. I was working now at an adaptive setting at a special education center, and started understanding, like, these students, you know, with maybe Down syndrome or with other disabilities, you know, they just wouldn't move as fluently and as with as much excitement when I just told them, you know, okay, start walking and then jogging and then skipping, all these different locomotor movements in the elementary ages. And then I said, well, let's put on some music, you know, let's put on some music and see, you know, it's just you just see the reaction, and they really, really loved it, you know, and they really just, and not only the students that within this population, also you have a lot of, we call them paraeducators, and they are, without them, we can't do our job. They're an amazing group of people, and what they do is beyond and above, you know, their pay grade, you know, and just them too, seeing their spirit, and they were enjoying it too, you know, and then you play some older songs for them, get those songs in there every once in a while. And then the spirit of the gym, you know, of the space is positive and it's uplifting. And then you can, you know, get them started with a slow song and then ratchet it up and then to a real fast-paced up-tempo song where everybody's running in the room, and then you slow it down with like a real slow song that just brings everybody back down, and you can do some stretching, and then everybody's, you know, got those ants out of their pants, and then, you know, you can ask them and direct them to do more things, you know, that they can attain. You know, the population, a lot of people, you know, I've seen children start from, you know, with these different ailments and different challenges that, you know, they've gone from crawling to walk. I mean, they're 5, 6, 7, but by the time they're 10 years old with our amazing occupational and physical therapy providers, you know, they're walking and, you know, various, they have to wear various, you know, they have different various physical challenges, you know, and but as a team, we push them as hard as we can with making them be the best that they can be, you know. That's and cool. So, you know, when you're there and everybody's working together for the best interest of the child, you know, as we would hope could happen in all schools in every place. But unfortunately, as you know, a lot of kids just squeak by with splinter skills, you know, and the ones that are, you know, you are missed are the ones that, you know, we never know. They could have.
So, John, what you mentioned, Eye of the Tiger before. I do have a memory of when Rocky came out. I did do some weightlifting to that Rocky song. What the hell's the name of it? Feeling Strong Now, you know?
Yeah.
What's the name of that song?
I don't know off the top of my head.
But I think I'm at the Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme level now. So, but the one thing I wanted to bring up was, in, as I said, conversations with other teachers, for some reason this subject keeps coming up, is when you had the full classroom and in your case, the physical training stuff, there were some kids that were introverted and some kids that were extroverted. And during COVID, when everyone went on Zoom, I guess for a time, when everything was in total lockdown, some of the ones that were naturally introverted students actually thrived in that environment, as opposed to the ones that, you know, were more sociable in the classroom setting or the gym setting or whatever. Did you find that as well in your specific aspect?
In my aspect, they, you know, with physical education, you had to depend a lot on their, you know, an honor system. You know, they didn't really, you know, the students who had psychological problems, they retracted further than the other ones that have maybe ADD, ADHD, you know, and also their cognitive ability, you know, had to be, and to see the different wide ranges of, you know, I saw a student who was extroverted and was very, you know, had street smarts, and you would think that this child was high functioning, you know, or cognitively. And then when you get these, one thing that was surprising is when you would get their weekly fitness and nutrition log, that their level of, you know, the English language was very poor. You know, some students that were introverted, you know, they felt more comfortable, you know, in the virtual classroom. Obviously, when you're doing something physical, you know, and it's there in the gym, you can't hide it. Either you're fast, you're slow, you have great reflexes, you know, you can throw the ball, you know, Nolan Ryan, or you can throw like Daffy Duck, you know. I mean, it's going to be what it's going to be, you know. And now once you go to the virtual world, you know, it's you know, now the playing field's level, you know, everybody's, you know, you really, and that's how it should be, you know, in the gym as well. But that's life, and that's, and even in the classroom when everybody's together, you know, we all know who the smarter kids were in the class. We all know who, you know, just from the test grades that they got, when you looked over, oh my God, I got a 70, that guy got 100, you know, or I got a, whatever it is, it is. And that's part of life. It's a part of life. And, you know, trying to get those kids that are introverted, you know, who knows, they're, you know, everybody's got their own story. Everybody's got their own experiences. So, and, you know, it's, you don't ever, as I try, you know, I just let the student feel, you know, I don't try to pull from them. I just guide them, you know, to be who they want to be, and to try to be on the same page with them. Listen, you got your stuff, you know, I got stuff. We all have our own challenges in life, but I'm here to help you, you know, understand the importance of physical education and the movement. And not only, you know, it was very difficult. You know, we do team sports, we do individual, Lifetime Sports, but just to have them explore and ask them, you know, I even put out there, you know, what is, can you invent your own sport? You know, can you invent something that hasn't been done yet? And we did a good month on that. And we did different, like if you could play a sport in a different country, what sport would that be? Just getting them to be creative what I've seen in all my years of education, that the creativity, especially now, is worse than ever. Because again, back to the whole, you know, now we're in this technological age where it's all input. Once you hand a child one of these, once you give a child a phone, creativity's gone. You know, once that world is given to them, then it all becomes, you know, now I'm not going to say that there isn't, you know, the digital, you know, ability to make cartoons now and art. There's many things that digitally that enhance the mind, but and a younger child, and even as they develop, you know, the more opportunities they have to be creative and to explore and to, you know, just dream of something, is so important. And I try to challenge them, you know, on a weekly basis to be creative and how can we make a difference? You know, ask open-ended questions and let them be heard, you know, let them be heard.
Well, the one thing I was going to ask you, because you mentioned team sports, are you in a coaching position as well, or do you direct like an athletic program for team sports?
We have had some Special Olympic teams. Unfortunately, with COVID and all that, and there was a former teacher / coach who was very involved. She retired. So that program, we're trying to get back started up. But we have had at our school a JV basketball team. Mm-hmm. And it's the only one in the state of New York. And we've had it at our school for about 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. And having that is just such an amazing experience.
Yeah.
In ways that one can only experience firsthand. Yeah. These students never been on a team before in their life.
Yeah.
And I teach fifth grade through the 12th grade. So this is a JV team that's mostly 9th through 12th. And these students were 14, 15, you know, 14 through 18. Most of them have never been on a team before because they haven't had the resources. Again, back to that, they haven't had a parent or even an adult figure to bring them to Little League when they were a kid, you know, or bring them to, you know, any type of recreational sport. So right there is an amazing concept that they're finally a part of something. You know, being adolescents, you know, is you just want to be a part of something, you know. And now again and that's team sports. Sports is so vital, and not only, you know, on that aspect, but anything, even if they got a young mind can get into the band, get into drama, get into, you know, the debate club, get into, and there's, you know, ROTC, because the feeling of wanting to be belonging to something is still in adolescence is very strong. And especially in the special education world, you know, where a lot of the students whom are classified and whatnot, they're really ostracized, you know, in their communities. And their families sometimes, you know, they really don't want to bring them up because they might feel that they're going to be embarrassed, or they don't know if the league can meet their needs, you know. And so the one thing with the basketball team that we do provide is it provides a safe learning environment, and one that where there's many challenges and there's many experiences. And boy, could I tell you some experiences from coaching that team. Mm-hmm.
Are some of the students like wheelchair bound? And
on the JV, we've had kids that have had cerebral palsy, that have, you know, wear braces and things as such.
Right.
We had a kid, you know, that and would shoot the ball and fall to the when he shot, he would fall every single time. He'd fall on the floor like a push up and pick himself up and get back down, going down on the floor, you know. So kudos to that young man. And, you know, we have a lot of the behavioral, you know, students who have, you know, some of them have very severe anger issues and have to really manage them through being on a team. And it is very stressful at times, but in the end, they once we let them each know, and everybody knows that we're, you know, a team, means, you know, people are going to make mistakes. People are going to have a great day. Sometimes you're going to have a bad day. That's just like in life.
Right.
And we're going to work together. We're going to work together through this. And, you know, it's okay. It's okay to fail. Any kid doesn't like to, but it happens, you know. And I try to, you know, we show them clips, you know, on iPads of these men and women that get paid millions of dollars and they can't, you know, make a free throw. Yeah. So
I've seen NBA players fall when they're shooting too. So, you know, well, kudos to the kid for getting back up. That's the telltale sign, getting back up on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What's the term I'm looking for? Intramural, or do you have other schools?
No.
Yeah.
But, well, the team that I coach there, we actually go and play other, you know, general ed schools, and it's, we've had some great experiences, and sometimes you have your good games, you have your bad games. You have some kids that get a little too hot headed. They got to take a break. You know, we try to explain to the referees, and the referees are really understanding, and the other coach is understanding, and, you know, you move forward.
What about the other students of that age? Are they understanding as well?
Some are. You know, it depends on the team. Every year, you know, your team's going to be a different makeup. A lot of schools have pulled back some of their enrollment, because at our school we get the students who, you know, from other districts, they bring them to us, and some home districts have really kept their students, because obviously if you send your students to our school, then there obviously there's a cost, you know, there's a cost for us to educate them. And so now that we're at the end of this pandemic, we've seen enrollment increase dramatically. You know, we have intakes, we have an intake of a student, and the
kid, in other words, if another school moves a kid to your school, that funding goes with them, so that's
correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, there's a wide variety of disabilities and challenges. We have an autistic program. We have a behavioral, you know, elementary school. We have more behavioral middle and high school. Then we have a, you know, where you're developmentally delayed. We have a different, you know, school for that, from the elementary and high school. So it's a large facility meeting the needs of the students. And
so let me ask you a question. It's March as we're recording this, March 29th, 2022. Where do we stand in terms of in-person versus Zoom now?
Well, we're not even, obviously, there, you know, there was tape in the hallways. There was these visual, you know, signs, keep your distance, you know, all that's off the, you know, hallway. Things are back more to normalcy. You know, we're going to start using the cafeteria. So you know, it's a way in which the you know, we're looking towards the light and not running away from it. And the virtual is still a viable need, because there are, especially in, you know, the even in the general ed setting, where if a kid is maybe, you know, anxiety and depression or you know, mental health in our country, that's a whole nother topic that you could spend weeks on.
But yeah,
it's been, for better or worse, it's a better thing if I have a, you know, being a father of four children, you know, if one of my kids was having a difficult opportunity, but they could still do their work from home, you know, via Zoom or via a virtual classroom. Now that's an option. And we still have kids that are, you know, that might be going through some anxious times in their life because of, you know, things that have happened, you know, that are out of their control. You know, when a parent dies, or a traumatic injury or a traumatic, you know, psychological episode happens to them. And so they can still be, you know, seeing people like this, you know, seeing their therapists, you know, it's comforting. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to, utilizing that is a positive. I don't think kids want to hear if it's a snow day and then we're going to be a virtual. I think they're all okay, guys. No snow day. Well, you're all virtual. No, you know, kids in my school are not saying going for that, and they're not saying, you know,
bad idea though, John. Not a bad idea. But funny you brought that up, because I was going to ask you two other questions. One, Do you feel like you'll be incorporating this, what you and I are doing, the Zoom meeting, into future, even when the pandemic goes the way? In my opinion, it's an endemic now, but whatever. And also, do you think what we've just been through over the last 3 years, going on just into our third year with this, do you think some students will develop PTSD from this experience, you know? I know children adapt faster than adults do, or better than adults do, but
absolutely.
I wanted to know your thoughts on those two things, but you expounded on it a little bit.
Well, it depends on obviously the age of the student, and you can't, you know, virtual learning when you have young, you know, kindergarten through fifth grade, you're not going to, you know, leave your kid at home and go to work, you know, if you still have, and that's changed too, if you can be lucky enough to do your job from home. So school districts have a lot, and in the future, it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, parents' rights are parents' rights. And if a parent wants, you know, I don't know if school districts, I don't think they will offer, but in short moments, if they need to have some virtual learning, they will, you know. And it's going to change technology, unfortunately, here's an example. If a school district has me as a physical, and they have, you know, ten other phys ed teachers, and they just say, well, you nine phys ed teachers are gone. We're just going to go virtual with Coach Hogan, and he'll, every day in the gym, when the kids show up, he'll be there on a video screen. She'll tell them what to do, you know, and they've just saved, you know, that amount of salary. Education, I disagree with that wholeheartedly, you know, but what they've been able to do is take obviously one educator and can reach everybody virtually, you know, the number of students that you have, but especially in the classroom, they could do that as well. But physical education is phys ed, you know, and I'm very proud that New York is one of the only states, unfortunately, that require it for all 4 years in high school to graduate with the New York State diploma. I think more states should be involved in that. But
require a physical education completion?
Yes, every you have to have 4 years of phys ed in order to graduate from New York State.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but it's definitely a good tool to be able to still utilize if a student has an illness, like I said, an illness, or has an extended stay from your school physically, you know. But more importantly, though, I think it should be used in those situations, because there's nothing like that. Our students are already in this technological and in this, you know, internet bubble, that where the one time they put down the phone and they interact with people. Social, you know, humans are social beings. Humans, you know, we interact, we can talk, we can, you know, talk non-verbally too, but get the students to communicate and do, you know, even like problem solving activities as together, you know, team building. Those things cannot be done as effective over Zoom, you know.
Right. Right.
And there's some things that are just in person that have to continue to move forward. And it's been a roller coaster of a ride. You know, it's very difficult, especially teaching phys ed with masks on, you know, and asking students to you know, perform physically, and then, you know, having to wear a mask and getting your, you know, your oxygen intake and CO2 and
are they
such
now? Are they?
We are maskless.
Okay. And
there are some students that choose to still do it. I had one. I do teach. We do have a summer school, so I teach grades kindergarten through, you know, ages 21. And some of these kids, they come though with the, you know, the distancing. Unfortunately, they would, and it's a shame that they're now, in their minds, they thought they couldn't be near anybody because of their, you know, what the parents and what the news media. So bringing them back into the fold, and I've seen some of them, they still are timid, and they'll still keep their distance from you and their mask. Some have gone, you know, half mask. Some it would just be a long process for them. And that's the very,
I was just, the other thing I was going to ask you, do you see maybe a rise in post-traumatic stress or just anxiety as they do get back into the normal, regular classroom setting? Do you see something, well, rise in that?
I don't see it because the PTSD,
anxiety or, you know, whatever.
I think the students that have the coping skills, you know, and have the support around them are they're going to move forward. And the ones that don't have the same support from home, you know, and that's so important here, they're going to be lagging behind a little bit. But as they continue to come to school and as these restrictions have been lifted, and, you know, they're going to feel that, you know, as you stated before, kids are very adaptable, and they're very, you know, in their world, you know, they're thinking, you know, it's just me, and there's no us yet. And until middle school, now there's a little bit of us, and then in high school, it's about we, you know. So, you know, they want to be a part. They want to have that social connection. And I think, you know, with social media, I am not, you know, I'm not as up to date with all the social, you know, the Instagram and the Snapchat, all that stuff. They are into that, and that too, whatever they're getting, the input that they're getting from social media is important, because that's what they're learning. That's what they think is true. And to get them to understand that not everything you see on that phone, you know, is true. And not everything you see on that phone and the information, you know, back check it, you know, make sure that, you know, where you're getting information is true and not, you know, fake news, you know. Or
I'll ask you a question that I bet you nobody's asked you. Do you see anything on the horizon in terms of post-traumatic stress or anxiety among the teachers who have to go through the same thing?
Absolutely, and that's a good point, Tom. We as teachers have been under, you know, stress like we've never been before. Mm-hmm. And to try to, we have lives and we have responsibilities and we have, you know, our own things going on as well. And it is difficult. It, you know, the in our profession, even the paraprofessionals, we have lost a dramatic amount of teachers, you know, that have retired and decided to take their pensions early and to not have to deal with the stress. So we're looking at a future where teachers are going to be in high demand. And I don't think if we don't change our attitude or change, you know, the profession and make it more attractable, because these young new teachers are coming in and they would have many other options in the private sector. If we as a nation cannot, I haven't even unfortunately heard this, the recent administration, I haven't heard education being up to the forefront. Obviously we have more important things going on right now, but still we need to demand better from our leaders, and we need to demand, you know, that education in America is more respected than it has been. You know,
I remember, to paraphrase something I heard a long time ago, the price of education is always cheaper than the price of no education.
You That's know? True. That's and a good saying.
To your point, a lot of people don't realize, you know, the focus is and should be on the kids as they go back into a normal routine. But a little bit of focus also has to be put on the teachers who went through the same pandemic as everybody else did and had to adapt. And you know, it's also stressful, like you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, if anybody's, you know, had children, and even a child is a big responsibility, and it can be exhausting. And as an educator, when you have 20 to 40 in a class, sometimes, you know, to be able to have classroom management skills and to just have the overall, it takes a lot of focus. It takes a lot of experience. It takes a lot of confidence, you know, and it takes a lot of work. Bottom line is work. I mean, we just don't show up and, you know, say, okay, read this book and answer three questions. You know, great teachers, and we all know we've all had that mentor in our life. You can put that teacher in your head, you know, who made a difference or who really stood out to you. And, you know, that teacher was dedicated, and that teacher was focused on making a difference. That's what all educators, you know, really, we don't get into it for the money. We get into it for the purpose of making a child's life the best it can be, you know, educationally and in my field, you know, physically and, you know, educationally, if I can combine those two. Mm-hmm. And I think we need more emphasis in America on finding great teachers and making sure we recognize them more. Because back then, this is, you know, when a child, that's changed a lot. When a child got in trouble at school and the parents supported, like, okay, so what did Johnny do here? You know, okay, well, when he gets home, he's going to, you know, Johnny's not going to be able to play his video game for a week. Well, now in some instances, and more so than others, is a lot of parents are, what happened at the school? You know, one of the most important things that a parent can, and it, you know, as the school should teach, is being responsible for your own actions, you know, taking accountability and understanding what happened and moving on. And it's not always, you know, children will make mistakes. It's okay. Children, you know, will act out sometimes. It's normal to have feelings. Now, obviously you can get more violent, and that's a whole nother level. And that has to be discussed and be disciplined in a different way if we're getting physical and, or if we're making threats. But in a just an ordinary dispute where a child and another child get in a fight over something silly, you know, both children get disciplined and they move on. But sometimes parents feel, well, what was the teacher doing to let them get in a fight? And there's all these different questions. Just, I think the more we respect and the more we have confidence in our teachers, I think, you know, the teachers are going to feel better about themselves. The more positivity that we are and the respect that we give teachers, you know, it's just going to help educate your child better, you know, and definitely have go into it in a positive light, not a negative light, you know, and just be thankful that that person who's taking care of your child for that whole entire day, or teachers, you know, are all looking out for the best interests of your son or daughter, and that, you know, they believe in them as much as you believe in them. Mm-hmm. And work together hand in hand, you know, it will definitely be a better, you know, outcome than the other way.
Yeah.
You know, we have to try to, and again, you know, it's so positive to be able to get out of this pandemic, and educators, a majority of them are going to have a nice summer vacation. And that really is, you know, something that we all as educators could use.
Yeah. And I hope when you do come back from vacation, it's in our rearview mirror completely, but time will tell on all those aspects. But as you said before, and I appreciate you coming on today, and I appreciate you putting up with this internet BS, but as you said before, hopefully, besides the obvious financial and benefit packages that can be made available, maybe augmented to attract more and better teachers, maybe lifting that level of respect for teachers would also make that more attractive as a career for talented people that would be great teachers.
Absolutely. And I mean, in other, you know, we ask ourselves why, you know, or, you know, we not in the top, you know, 10% of all the other countries in math and science. And, you know, we're supposed to be this beacon of, you know, truth and life, prosperity and everything in around the world. But yet again, our educational system continues to fail or lack behind, you know, other countries, whereas it's such a shame that you can have a you know, New York City cab driver from Haiti will be able to understand and speak more effectively and understand our English language than some of our own kids. You know, it's all, and as again, Tom, unfortunately, it's money. And you know, how can we, you know, as taxpayers demand more out of our, you know, our politicians to emphasize that, you know, not, it's a socioeconomic point as well. What it was, we're supposed to, you know, from our constitution, equality, you know, all men are created equal, and it's still to this day that's not true, you know. And you know, education has gone through a wide range of, especially in America, trials and tribulations. But a child who is in a lower socioeconomic, you know, setting should have the same impact, the same, you know, materials and needs than that of a child who's in the higher socioeconomic class. And when we start, you know, to as a nation demand better from our education, you know, the superintendents, the ones that really make it happen, you know, I think education can really thrive in a much better way.
Well, I intended to have a podcast, I was thinking of a couple of months down the road having one, and I'd love to have you join with a couple of other teachers as well, about the decline in the returns of our education system since the inception of the Department of Education, which was, I think, in the late 70s. There's been a remarkable decline in the results we're getting out of it since the federal government got involved. But that's, I could spend another hour talking about that, and I want to educate myself a little bit more about the subject before I expound on it. But I have a gut feeling one has something directly to do with the other. But I certainly appreciate your time tonight, John. You and I met you through a mutual friend of ours, Sue, who is your better half. And I appreciate you coming on to talk about this. For some reason, this topic has come up often and since we started this podcast, which has been about a year, just a little under a year. And given the guests we've had on, like I said, we've had two professors and one who is a who also teaches in the special ed field down in Lower Westchester. And that the topic has always come up about having to deal with the COVID and how you treat the students. So I wanted to get you on here to get your aspect from the, you know, the phys ed side of the thing, which one of the teachers I did have was a music teacher, teaches piano. And mm-hmm. That was a unique challenge. They're all unique challenges, but I thought that was especially unique. And I think your challenge was also especially unique given the field you're in.
So yes.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, we appreciate your time tonight. And if you want to close out with something, yeah, hit it.
Sure. You know, thank you for having me. You know, it definitely is a challenge. And it's something that I'll never forget. And I'm just so proud to have the other support of my family and friends and my other colleagues. And I know, you know, I did say some negative things about where education is, but teachers teach because they love what they do.
Yes.
And that's never going to change.
Mm-hmm.
As an educator, I just know it can be better, you know, and I just wish that, you know, we can strive as a nation and to find the goodness and, you know, demand more from our, you know, politicians and demand better, facilities and provide, you know, teachers still are buying, you know, materials and these things shouldn't, you know, I've had to purchase materials. You know, these things are just what teachers are going to do because they're givers, not takers for the most part. And, you know, I just wish the best to everyone out there and, you know, maybe reach out to an old teacher that you had and that would make their day, you know, reach out before they pass, you know, and, or if you're, you know, you could just even give your child's teacher a Dunkin' Donuts gift card, just because to say thank you for who you are. You know, yes, we, you know, get paid and we get paid well, but you know, we're still trying to balance. You know, anybody likes a surprise and anybody likes to be told, thanks for the job that you're doing. And we appreciate you. And thanks again for this opportunity, Tom. And hopefully what I've been able to give to the podcast is something that will be meaningful and educational to many.
Well, thank you again. And maybe, like I said, further on up the road, if you have you and a couple other people in the education field discuss that, I'd appreciate that. And I promise I'll buy another booster so the internet won't suck.
No worries, Tom. If you want to talk about anything else, the Olympic Development Soccer Program or any other topics, I've got a myriad of topics to other things.
And it's encouraging to know people with your dedication are still involved. And again, we'll see you further on up the road, John. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Have a nice evening.
You too. Thank you.